maniacs, me and the Ultimate, know what we're facing when we go to war in SummerSlam against Sergeant Slaughter and his troops. We know they've got us outmanned, but we've got them outpowered. We've both got the heavy artillery, and we're playing by Slaughter's rules, which are no rules at all. Could be chemical warfare, could be hand grenades, it doesn't matter. But the terrain is going to make the difference. It's not the swamps of Vietnam. It's not the sands of Persian Gulf. It's the beautiful, massive square garden where all the warriors and all the Hulkamaniacs will unite to make the most powerful army of all warriors.
All the Hulkamaniacs and the warriors that have eaten the dirt from others and the sand that you have taken from Sergeant Slaughter. We have surrounded ourselves in a foxhole 10 foot deep. And as I stand with the most awesome force in the World Wrestling Federation, combined with the sickness of my warriors, let them speak and let the Hulkamaniacs attach themselves to the concrete walls of Madison Square Garden. Cause what you gonna do with Hulkamania and the Ultimate Warrior destroy you?
Now, you want to compare this belt to Hulk Hogan's? That would be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. You want to compare the man that wears this belt to Hulk Hogan? That would be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. You see, Hulk Hogan is the World Wrestling Federation champion. The man that owns this belt is the real champion, Ric Flair.
It's not easy to take the same steps that a snake takes. But the warrior has begun. He has walked these same steps I'm taking now. Felt the earth beneath his feet, the very same dirt. I wonder how many times this tree has seen someone buried underneath the dirt. The warrior has felt the coldness of the stone. I wonder why Lion was buried there. The warrior's not taking these steps because he wants to. It's because he has to put the puzzle together. To put the puzzle together, he's had to do the hardest thing any man could do. Trust me. Trust me. And he has done that. And he has learned. But you see, you might be wondering where the warrior is right now. You might say he's digging up the past. Yeah, digging up the past.
There we go, my man. Exhume the truth that lies beneath the soil. Come on, dig. Dig.
You, Snake Man, the only other one that walks living amongst the dead.
Come on, faster, my big man. Use those big, wide shoulders. Deeper. Hey, Doug, that's not gold, my man. Huh? Smells nice, doesn't it? Death is always great to smell, huh, warrior? Huh? Oh, what a scary cut. Take that. Oh, wait now. This is just the beginning, just the beginning. Trust me, if I done you wrong, you listen to me, my man. Yeah, you listen. You see, now I must bury you with the same soil. Oh, the very same soil, my man. Bury your fear, warrior. That's what we must do.
I trusted you before, Snake Man. Before my gods, I trust you once again. Bury me, Snake Man!
Stand your ground, warrior! Stand your ground!
Bury me!
and welcome to OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast. Filmed in glorious grapple vision and encoded with blast processing, we chronologically critique a Hulkamania era pay-per-view by pay-per-view. This is your host,
Jay Hunter.
Joined as ever, our very own Justice League, the very dark, Dark Knight. And the Master Seaman Oz.
Hey!
It's the 1991 SummerSlam, and it's coming up right now. It's SummerSlam, a match made in heaven and a match made in hell. It's August 26, 1991, from Madison Square Garden in New York, New York. 405,000 TVs tuned in at home, with a sellout crowd of 20,000 fans, with a live gate of $445,000. Now, announcers tonight are Gorilla Monsoon, Bobby Heenan, and Rowdy Roddy Piper. How's it going, lads?
Good.
Do you?
Not too bad.
Don't tell us how tired you are. Just complain on the podcast, you know?
No, life is good. All things awesome.
Yeah, another episode, another
day. Bar milkshake.
Alright, that's enough faffing. Alright. Last episode, OSC, you were pining for watching the Silver Vision release, and you got your wish. We're all watching the Coliseum Home Video version.
And this was 2 hours 38 minutes. And do you know how long it would have been if we were watching the other version?
3:16.
Oh my god.
As you can notice here, there's not much that was really cut out, and actually this version is the better version because we get some more backstage stuff, which is more important than if you're watching the live show and you didn't get it.
So what is cut out?
Well, without spoiling out the stuff at the start and the stuff at the end.
Okay.
The most important part of the show. Alright, we kick off the Coliseum Home Video. We kick off with a hot fuck off. Yeah, so we kick off with a Coliseum Home Video exclusive interview in Macho Man's dressing room as he says he's excited but petrified about his wedding later on tonight.
Why would he be scared?
Wedding day jitters? Is he going to run away? You know, that's slightly more interesting than this is definitely going to go ahead swimmingly.
Yep, fine.
Vince treats us to another throat-burning stormer. You're welcome, also.
Yeah, well done.
A great green screen opening.
Exact same thing. It was the worst.
I could, like, the cheapest of the cheapest B-movie shit.
We did get to see Hogan and Warrior having a pose down before we even started the pay-per-view. That was pretty cool.
Yes, as we see our double main event, a match made in heaven, Elizabeth and Macho Man's wedding, and a match made in hell, a handicap 3-on-2 tag match between Sergeant Slaughter, General Adnan, and Colonel Mustafa, aka Iron Sheik, versus the Ultimate Warrior and WWF Champion Hulk Beetroot Hogan.
But who is the handicap on, Jay? That's what I want to know. You know what I meant.
Editing out. An 8-match card tonight. Phew. Unlike WrestleMania's 14,
delighted. Although, did you count the match made in heaven as a match?
Nope.
I would. It's essentially the length of a match. So, I mean, it's 8 matches and a segment. So, don't mislead people on this.
Okay. Well, it's not a match. How about 9
No, aren't segments? WWE the ones who misled people by calling it a match?
Well, it's...
Ooh, that, yeah, well,
they're matchmaking, though. As in... To become one? No? Americans love this shit.
I think Bret Hart loves that as well.
That before. Yeah, two hearts beating
into one.
What's that song Bret had? That love ballad song he has?
No, was it?
Never Been a Right Time to Say Goodbye. It's a ballad where he tells a girl that he must walk away and because let her down easy.
Because his wife found out he cheated.
We kick off our SummerSlam spectacular with a 6-man tag. It's The Dragon, that's his name, Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, and the British Bulldog versus The Warlord and Power and Glory Hercules and Paul Roma, all managed by Slick. Holy shit, the muscle mass in this match. A steroid scandal or what? Ricky Steamboat here returns to the WWF with a strong-armed dragon gimmick, full-on pseudo-scale hat and wings and breathing fire.
So does this mean that he now has to cut promos from the point of view of a dragon? And be, and just be like, rawr. That's fire, by the way.
You know, early 90s is the time for gimmicks. And, you know, he is a great wrestler, but I think he needed a gimmick. Why not the dragon? Better a dragon than a ferret.
Should he finish his promos with going like... Ricky Steamboat, he is back in the WWF after being in the NWA / WCW for 3 years. So we last saw him in episode 5, Survivor Series 88. If you remember, he left on bad terms with Vince, leaving after WrestleMania 3 where he beat Randy Savage for the IC belt to be with his wife and newborn son. Vince never forgot, and so he's returned here as a fresh rookie, the Dragon, and he even has the Flying Cross body finisher. His past has been wiped clean. He was only referred to as the Dragon. They never called him Ricky Steamboat. Yeah. But, like, anyway, why is he here? He was offered a bigger contract to keep him away from WCW, where he tore the house down, feuding with Flair, and winning the world title.
But wasn't his world title run a bit of a bust?
He's not a cemented world champion or whatever, but he's still pretty awesome. Enough that Vince was like, yeah, let's buy him and then fucking shelve him.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty bitter. That's what happens if you put family ahead of business. Compare that to Bret Hart, who worked the day after his brother died.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually debuted before WrestleMania, attacking heels like the Earthquake, but no, you don't debut on a WrestleMania. You wait till SummerSlam.
Yes. The tag team, there's...
Kitao and Tenryu, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were allowed to debut on a WrestleMania.
Alright, we kick off with the Dragon and Roma, who is shown here as the leader of the heels. Steamboat spends the majority of the match selling for the heels and working towards the hot tag. Now, Heenan calls Roma Romeo Roma, while Monsoon returns with Herc and Jerk.
He's looking well old, isn't he, Hercules?
Has the steroid ban come in yet?
No.
Because it looks like it has for him. I thought he looked like someone who spent 10 years working out and just quit one day. And like skin was hanging off. And like you say, he looked really old and haggard.
Just as a quick timeline, Dr. Zahorian, the physician that was giving the wrestlers all of their drugs, went on trial over the summer. And then he got sentenced in December, but WWE started cleaning up their act in November.
Okay.
But that is a load of shit. Yeah, so the returning Steamboat, I thought he looked really weak. He was the weak link. Tornado, I noticed he was very over, but either McMahon couldn't trust him or he's unreliable, so he was...
Well, both were right.
Yeah. Wasted here, pretty much making up the numbers. That's quite sad. You see the potential in him, he's fucking... a safer version of the Warrior. You know?
Maybe not as big, but he's more ripped than Warrior was.
You wouldn't know that he has one fake foot.
No.
No, never.
There's no change in his gait or anything, you know? No.
One thing I noticed, that no rockers. Mm. So the first pay-per-view they probably missed in a long time.
much like some other notable absence, they were just figured out of the card. Maybe it was just a backlash from people shouting, 14 matches at Mania! The fuck is your problem? Bulldog is tagged in, but is cut off. Eventually, Tornado gets the hot tag, and although Warlord catches Davey in midair, Von Erich hits the Tornado punch, but only garners a 2. That's a great spot. The match disintegrates into a schmoz as Bulldog hits Roma with a running power slam. Davey decides against pinning him and tags in Steamer instead. Really weird. And Roma kicks out after 1. It was like, oh, that's what you get. Bulldog then tags in Steamer, who hits his rookie crossbody finisher on Roma 4-3, and the faces win at 10:42.
I thought it was an okay opener. It was nothing special, nothing to talk about, but it wasn't terrible either.
It was fine. I mean, you know, we have Warlord, Steamer, Tornado, Bulldog. Even Power and Glory are pretty decent, so it could have been so much more.
The Dragon, he got battered the whole match, and he was just tagged in to get the finisher.
Yeah.
But in terms of who looks the weakest out of the six, it's him.
Oh, God, yeah. Really, he has the least amount of muscle. Of course he looks the weakest. And he's also the most foreign.
Steamboat, he's done with WWF pay-per-views, as he left before the Survivor Series when he was told he'd be a mid-card jobber and be fed to Taker. Within weeks, he'd be back in WCW winning the tag belts with good old Dusty.
Nice.
Yeah. I had the 1991 WWF annual. And
nice.
Steamer is, he's got his own page and everything in it. And he was only in one pay-per-view as the Dragon. Poor.
Also closing the door behind them is Paul Roma, who left after the European tour, the battle at the Royal Albert Hall. So it's the end of Power and Glory. The silver lining, though, is that Hercules is staying around.
Hey. More paydays. Yes.
And the Survivor Series 91 will mark his 19th consecutive pay-per-view payday.
That's some record.
This whole pay-per-view is, man, a huge reshuffling. It's definitely hit the reset button after Mania. Slick is also done with pay-per-view. He'd hand off the Warlord to Harvey Whippleman, he'd turn face and be on primetime wrestling, and he'd make sporadic appearances on TV and home video footage. And he also sung in The Rock's Volume 5 song on Bed Pie.
You've married AJ and Daniel Bryan on Raw this year.
Very good.
Awesome segment, yeah.
Very good, well done.
And the convention that I met, the Briggler, Virgil.
Virgil,
Slick,
yeah.
Slick was there as well.
Was he?
Didn't go near him because I'd already spent my fucking $10.
So, Steamer, he returned to WWE in 2005 as a road agent and inducted into the 2009 Hall of Fame. And he came out of retirement, if you remember, at WrestleMania 25, wrestling alongside Snuck and Piper in a handicap match versus Chris Jericho.
That's correct.
And WWE, both fans and The Office, were so impressed with his performance that he got a singles match the next month at Backlash with Jericho.
That's right. And then he went on to be nearly murdered by Nexus, wasn't it? He had a really bad, like, encephalitis or something.
Yes.
Poor guy. Poor guy.
Before his match at Mania, he was saying, yeah, I can go about 70% as I could have back in the 80s. It's actually, man, you can. This is actually about 70% of what you did in the 80s. Man, good stuff.
Yeah.
Like Hogan's on about 5%. Like.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Foley, God. Yeah. Man can't even walk down a ramp anymore without making me feel sad.
He can't do a stand-up show without making me feel sad.
In the locker room mock-up with Sean Mooney, Mr. Perfect, with the coach, who has that fucking annoying whistle-blowing Fonzie gimmick.
Who is this guy, anyway?
Well, if you were a dirty Canuck, you'd know who it is. It's John Tolos. He's a retired Canadian wrestler, much like Wurzel Gummidge. Mr. Perfect says that Bret Hart... Oh, God, this is like... I remember watching Superstars Wrestling at the time. Every week, they'd say the same fucking thing. Bret Hart is excellent, but he's not perfect. No, I'm perfect, you're not a... Jesus Christ. And that match is next. I just shit on it. I didn't mean to shit on it. It's Bret Hart vying for the Intercontinental Championship held by Mr. Perfect. If you'll remember, back at episode 13, WrestleMania 5, after beating the Blue Blazer, Owen Hart, Mean Gene tells Perfect that Bret, he'd love to wrestle Mr. Perfect, which he accepts. And the paperwork must have just gone through. 2.5 years later, here we are.
You know, it was 91, they had to use, like, postal services and shit, you know what I mean? Shit took fucking time.
They're in the same building.
Yeah, this Pratt with the coach getup, John Tolos, he was just brought in to manage Perfect and the Beverly Brothers as the brain moved to the commentary desk.
Best thing they could do with Bobby Heenan is get him on the commentary desk.
Yeah, because you get him for every match.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, you could tell both the office and the fans were eagerly awaiting Brett's singles push, spooging themselves at this match. Classic commentary between Brain and Gorilla, and yeah, fuck off, Piper. Steve, were you locking there? Will you stop?
Holy shit. Every single match, multiple times.
Will you be serious?
Why, Yana?
Why don't you stop? Brett wins the opening exchanges, culminating in a few hair pulls and headlocks. Hitman clotheslines Perfect over the top rope, who dawdles on the outside. And Brett retrieves him, and in the process, rips Perfect singlet. Yeah, you can tell he looks a bit soft, doesn't he?
Really looks he's a bit out of shape.
Piper tries to cover it up by saying he's been hitting the gym, you know, increasing his strength. No, he hasn't.
What was it, that he was working for strength rather than cardio?
Yeah.
Remember, obviously you don't remember because it hasn't happened yet, but do you remember Sean at WrestleMania 14, where it's obvious that his back is fucked because you can see him and his posture is like, it's so upright that he's nearly leaning back because he's so fucked. You can see Perfect is walking around the exact same way in this match.
So he was working with a major back injury. He broke his tailbone and had bulging discs out of his spine.
Oh.
So all those years of super selling and crazy bumps caught up to him. So he wanted to take time off, but Vince is like, I'd really like to push Brett as the next star. And he's like, yeah, I want to put him over. So I'll just gut it out and I'll just get surgery after the match. I'll be fine. And
so, possible painkiller addiction at this point as well, I'd imagine.
Oh, Jesus. Yes.
Poor guy. Muscle relaxers as well.
Brett ties up Perfect. Piper exclaims, Perfect's yelling rape. It ain't gonna help. Snooker's going, yeah! Shots of Brett's parents, Stu and Helen Hart, strewn throughout the match. It's the first time that's happened.
Do any of you guys think Stu Hart looks like the grumpiest motherfucker in the history of the world?
I can only imagine that the only joy he gets is stretching young lads who want to be wrestlers.
Fuck's sake. His son is wrestling for the third most important belt in wrestling, after NWA and the Fed, the world title. Not a smile out of him, not a clap, just grumpy, sour, stone-faced.
But in fairness, like, he's lived a pretty tough life. He used to live, like, in a tent out in the middle of the fucking...
Yeah, he was a carny at the, you know, the show back in the tens, like.
So, yeah, he made his money, but then, of course, sure, everyone sucked him dry in the end. And...
Probably some stretching guys.
It wasn't fucking hell in any.
Stu's probably better. Oh, why aren't you wrestling in front of some cows and Stampede Wrestling? Like?
Did you hear Heenan say when the camera go up to the Hart parents and he'd be like, somebody said they're looking nervous, and he's like, yeah, they're looking nervous because they snuck in and the usher is looking for them.
Heenan on top form tonight.
Yep.
Perfect gets time out to recover by keeping Brett at bay on the outside. And it's like, Jesus, you are injured, aren't you?
He's moving so
A lot of stalling here. And Hennig gets a lovely turnbuckle whip and snapmare, but only garners a two. Disappointing to see Perfect wrestle a brawling match. You're a technician, and it's like, only if you're this fucked will you start punch-kick wrestling.
Perfect has Brett up on the top rope, and he just pushes him off. And Brett's meant to fall to the outside, and he takes, like, the safest bump in the world. You know, I'm going to tangle my legs to break my fall, then I'm going to tangle my arms and break my second fall, you know. Perfect, that's how it's done.
Perfect pushes the ref for not counting three, and Earl threatens to throw him out of here. After another Brett turnbuckle whip, Perfect hits the Perfect Plex, but Brett kicks out of two, and the commentators shit themselves and mark out saying, oh, it's never been done before. It happened two pay-per-views.
I see. You know the spot where the person is walking around the edge of the ring and they're holding on to the top rope and someone kicks the leg out of their leg and they do the kind of backward flip? Perfect tried it, and it's because he was so fucked he like landed on his head.
Brett tries a variety of regular single moves and tries for the pin each time unsuccessfully. Hitman is in complete control and locks the sharpshooter, but Perfect turns the tide following Coach's distraction. And at this point, the crowd are just going mental for Brett. Anyway, the finish of the match, Perfect blatantly hits a low blow, but Brett catches his foot in the leg drop. In a wonderful transition, he locks and reverses the hold into the sharpshooter. And Earl calls for the belt before the move is applied. And Bret Hart is the new Intercontinental Champion at 18:03, ending Perfect's 9-month reign. Wow, what do you think of that?
So, back in the day, didn't people just pretty much submit most of the time straight away? Submission, move on, okay, submit.
Probably a few seconds, yeah.
I thought in this case, I thought it was really well done, as in, it was immediate and possibly too quick, but it really put over the sharpshooter as a fucking class submission move.
I think Earl was just looking out for Perfect and that his back is fucked. Get him out of the ring as soon as
you
can.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Unlike today where he'd like, oh, my back is fucked. Put me in the sharpshooter for a minute. Yeah. That'll show the boys. Like. So, Brett doesn't want the belt. Instead, he strips Perfect down and Steve, what's he do?
He throws Perfect singlet over his shoulder like a belt.
This is my championship. Bring this everywhere. Steve, sniff it.
Yeah, it's one of your favourite spots in wrestling history, is the strip down, the strip tease. And I love that. Perfect loses the match, makes no complaints about it, is just walking towards the ropes in a very gentlemanly fashion. And Brett, no, you're not leaving with your clothes on. Makes a complete fool out of him. Completely unprovoked. Brett's now saying it's all about Perfect. It's less about the belt. So the guy walks.
His out flares up in the crowd. Stretch him!
Is this kind of a passing of the torch thing instead of like William Regal and giving his boots and tights to Daniel Bryan? He's taking the mantle from Mr. Perfect and wearing it.
He's going to come out in Perfect's jocks next month.
Lord Alfred Hayes is in the crowd with Stu and Helen. Oh my god, he fumbles out "It's wonderful" before Alfred yaks it from him.
Stu, tell us exactly what you think about your son.
It's wonderful, isn't
it? Well, there you go.
It's not as good as it could have been if you had two of these guys in their prime, but it's still better than most matches you're going to see in this era.
Yeah, but as you said, it could have been.
It could have been a five-star classic.
Imagine if they did this 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I really liked, you know, when it was building up to the finish. Possibly Perfect. He knew he was coming to the end of the match and he lifted his game. Probably to the detriment of his back.
Get up! Backstage, Mean Gene Okerlund is with the Bushwhackers and their new best pal, Andre the Giant, sporting a brace of crutches. Kayfabe thanks the earthquake, giving him a chop block.
It's clever booking, giving him an excuse to have crutches.
Why does Jimmy Hart want to manage Andre?
Aha! Feud plot threads everywhere. It's a theme of the night where there's too much going on and it's just a bit of a mess, really. Earthquake had been a busy boy since WrestleMania 7. On the 27th April Superstars, Quake was wrestling Jake. He tied up Roberts in the ropes and dragged Jake's snake bag into the centre of the ring and then did his Richter scale and then delivered a giant whoopsie, squashing and killing Damien. Jake gets the bag, looks in the bag, and he just flips out, devastated. Oh man, that was a pretty big story to tell, yeah. Meanwhile, Andre had been apparently considering a return, hearing offers from various heel managers and refusing them. There was one each week. They showed a vignette and Fuji was there as like a restaurant with Andre the Giant. You could see Scallon in the background. And he's like, ah, you come to me, you have big success. I give you big cake, big success. And obviously he's a big cake, so Andre gets his head and squish it into the cake. When the same befell Jimmy Hart, he got shot down. Quake chop blocked Andre and injured his knee. His back is fucked, so he legitimately needed crutches to get around. So here's a good on-screen excuse.
Even if he wasn't on crutches, I fail to see the value of having Andre as your client, other than perhaps the circus freak circuit.
Yeah.
You know, the great leaning giant of some sort. You know, in the ring, he has been awful for many years. It's very odd.
So it's the debut of The Natural Disasters, Earthquake and Typhoon, with Jimmy Hart versus Luke and Butch, the Bushwhackers, with best pal Andre the Giant.
Aren't The Natural Disasters fucking awesome?
Yeah.
Yes, yes,
they are. They are so great.
Do you like their new colour scheme?
Love it.
Love everything about them.
All right.
Even Butch is buffed up. He looked like in really good shape.
Maybe there was a surplus of steroids going on. He signed for all the packages of Titan Terrorism. Well, let me tell you about Tugboat. In a 6-man tag, Tugboat Thomas turned heel on the Bushwhackers and helped Earthquake. A week later, Methodist South introduced them as the Heel Typhoon, forming a new tag team, the Natural Disasters. So, bravo it, Typhoon in.
Excellent.
Excellent. Did you have any facts about Tugboats?
Why does nobody turn heel on Hogan? Like, Tugjob was Hogan's best mate at the time. He should have fucking turned heel on Hogan.
It would have guaranteed him a title shot.
True.
Yeah. Unfortunately, after he lost, he'd have been fucked for the rest of his career, yeah. So maybe it's better off.
Well, but, you know, if he won, great, he has the title.
I suppose, yeah. You can't go in expecting to lose.
It's late lunchtime in New York as Butch illegally bites Typhoon's arse.
Not only is the referee seeing it, but he's like leaning in, going like, "Stop it! Stop biting his arse!" Like, count DQ yeah, bell, yeah. Pull him off. Even you know what I mean.
The faces clean house using Earthquake as a battering ram and sending him out with a double clothesline. That was pretty awesome. Pop the cred.
Earthquake basically looking like a chump for the first kind of maybe 2-3 minutes. This never would have happened 6 months ago.
A Canadian Roddy Piper says the Bushwhackers have Americana inside. Fuck off. The Disasters turn the tide, working on Butch's back with a lovely Jesse the Body torture rack into a bear hug. This is awesome. Tandem big man move. And it's at this point, Heenan hears that, oh, Hogan's in his locker room and actually leaves the commentary table. And fuck this throwaway match. Yeah, so actually this is Typhoon's first proper match on pay-per-view. You know, he was around since before SummerSlam last year, but he was bumped for Bossman as Hogan's mate at SummerSlam, and he just made up the numbers at the series and Rumble, and he was bumped off Mania as well. He was supposed to be Taker's first victim.
Wow.
He probably wouldn't have been able to do the tombstone on him, so maybe it was the right decision.
Mm. Yeah, do you think he'd have to last ride him kind of thing? Maybe chokeslam, just give him the world's worst chokeslam. Yeah. That? Yeah, I thought this was a pretty nothing match. Went back and forth pretty early on, so I thought the match was in fast forward, and it was, and thank you. Between Mania and SummerSlam, Earthquake squashed Damien, and Jake was devastated. Would they not have a match at SummerSlam?
Maybe they're building up to, like, Earthquake and Andre or something, so Andre can lean in the corner.
That's very good, because actually at WWF Magazine, they printed like a SummerSlam card, which would be Jake and Andre versus the Natural Disasters. That makes much more sense, doesn't it?
It does.
But if you've seen Andre's immobility, that was never going to happen.
No.
The faces clean house again, but this time unsuccessfully, as Butch is sandwiched between Earthquake and Typhoon. Quake starts the tremors and hits the giant whoopsie and gets the 3 at 6:26. Yeah, this is actually Andre's last pay-per-view appearance as well.
I'm glad about that.
Yeah.
It's just gotten sad, to the point where it's sad, yeah.
Yeah. He'd actually die of a heart attack in January 93 in his native homeland of France. And he was the WWF's first inductee to its Hall of Fame, which was created 5 days after his death. And he was the sole inductee. Mm. That's quite classy, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's lovely. Now, post-match, the Disasters size up Andre as the LOD. Piper says it stands for...
Look out, Dolly.
Look out, dummy.
Oh, Dolly. Right. Yeah.
And they ward off the heels. As the heels leave, Andre swipes at them, flailing with his crutches.
It's like an old woman with her handbag.
Outside Hogan's locker room, apparently he just sellotapes a flimsy piece of paper to the door, saying Hulk on it. Heenan formally challenges Hogan on behalf of the real world's champion, Ric Flair. Holy shit, he's got the WCW championship in his hands on WWF television.
They're turning this into a comedy segment. They're not making a big deal out of this. What's going on, Jay?
I'm glad you asked. For a few weeks before SummerSlam, Heenan's been proclaiming that Flair, the real world champion, is coming to face Hogan, and he do so with the WCW belt in hand. It's surreal seeing it. Flair had been fired from WCW by Jim Hurd in July, and that was over a contract dispute. So he was being paid $750,000 per year, and it was good for another year, and Hurd wanted to extend it, but he wanted to pay him $300,350 instead. And he also said, I want to push Flair down the card, and I want you to put over Luger, and he's the next big guy. And he just said, fuck off. At this time, he hadn't actually signed for the WWF. But,
whoa.
Yeah, but it was pretty much a mere formality. Hmm. You know, so he said, I'm actually sitting at home here with the WCW title. They haven't given me the $25,000 retainer for my title. I've got it in my possession. And Vince is like, sure, send it up to Titan Towers anyway. And he was like, yeah, all right. Fuck him. Well, one thing is that this feels like reality has impinged on wrestling storylines. They were going in one direction and holy shit, we're jumping on this now. Fuck whatever we're doing. Ric Flair is coming to the WWE.
This shit doesn't happen enough in this day and age. You know, like they're too rigid and they're not willing enough to jump on something when it's hot. Hmm. But like, legally, were there ramifications of them having the WCW title on their TV?
Yes. If you'll notice, the specific wording of it is that Heenan said he was the real world champion,
yeah,
and he'd only ever refer to it as the NWA champion, not the WCW champion, because as soon as they saw the belt on WWF TV, they rang up their lawyers and trying to get a lawsuit together. But this is in the early stages, so it goes unblurred, and here it is. Isn't that fucking wow. Mental?
Wow.
It's fantastic. If I was Flair, I'd be a little bit nervous, though, about just sending, not signing a contract with Vince, sending my title up, essentially without protection, so that Vince can bring it on TV and throw it in the fucking garbage can. And then Flair will never get a job at WCW again. Vince doesn't want him, yeah, and he's left sitting at home on his arse.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, I was very trusting of him.
Yeah.
Mm. So Hogan, apparently, as you never actually get to see him on screen, slams the door in Heenan's face and the commentators chuckle.
Yeah, comedy segment.
Yeah, didn't like that. How do you feel about the WCW title being on WWF television?
That's great.
Yep. I'm sure any of us in that situation probably do the same thing. This is fucking huge.
So you go to Hulk Hogan's locker room and you're there overseas with the title. It's like, I challenge you. Hulk Hogan.
It's impossible, Jay. That's just a ridiculous segment. OOC would never win the world title.
Humiliation.
In the locker room, Sean Mooney is with the Million Dollar Man and a matching gold and black clad sensational Sherry. Now, Mooney recounts DiBiase's mistreatment of Virgil. In classic DiBiase style, he retorts to cancel your celebrations, and he's brought Virgil's crying towel.
That's great.
So we got the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, with Sherry versus Virgil. And this is for the Million Dollar Championship belt.
So where did Piper disappear to? Is he not his friend anymore? Is he still pissed off that he made him fuck up his knee?
He can't walk. He can't walk anymore, so he's at commentary booth.
In fairness, he's putting him over like fucking mad.
Holy shit, yeah. Prior to the pay-per-view on TV, Sherry was going around with a black and a gold tutu. I think that was hotter. Whenever DiBiase would beat his opponents, you know, he'd take a dollar and put it in his mouth. He'd get the dollar from like her G-string. And cool. So she'd pull up her skirt and he'd get it off. Oh, this is hot.
That's hot.
Yeah. I did like her jacket, but it did make her look like Ace Rimmer. Big tinfoil jacket. Roast a turkey in it. The commentators literally call Sherry a disease-ridden whore. As Monsoon asks if Piper got a hooker mouth disease from kissing her.
Fucking hell.
Come on, lads. Virgil initially sends DiBiase packing, but the heel takes control on the outside. Heenan returns the commentary and puts over Flair.
I think Piper says, oh my god, your pants are all green. Monsoon's like, oh, it's because he was holding that title.
Yeah.
Ah, very good.
Yeah, it is good.
Two sentences in, Yeah, two sentences of mining brings us to the finish. Virgil puts on the $1 million dream, but Sherry hits Virgil with her purse and gets the DQ. And the crowd, oh, they were distraught at this. However, Fink explains at verbose length that instead,
the ref has every right to DQ Ted DiBiase, but he's going to send Sherry to the back and restart the match.
Sherry is out.
And who kicks her out? Jim Bowen in a Monkswig.
Wurzel Gummidge escorts Sherry out. It is Umbop haircut. And we get a parting arse shot of Sherry. Thank you. So after selling for an ice age, the two men pop up instantly when the camera gets to them. Resume the match. DiBiase takes a few 10-count punches and intentionally causes a ref bump. By this point, Piper is an insufferable Pied Piper for Virgil. He just, come on, let's go. Come on, let's go.
Get up.
Did you like Piper's commentary?
I enjoyed his enthusiasm, but I didn't like it. But I appreciated that he did everything he could to get Virgil over.
Okay, because I hated it. I just thought, stop screaming in my ear. Come on, grip something better. Like, yeah, fuck off. I don't think I like Piper anyway. It's just one of the eye-opening bits of doing this is that you're not that good. I used to think Piper was one of the greatest talkers in the world, but we're on episode 23 now, and he's not terrible, but
no,
he's highly overrated.
He's overrated, but he's still one of the better, you know what I mean?
But he just cuts a crazy promo. He's like, though. I like sandwich bags and I go home and cook a cat. You know, it's like, who gives a shit about it? We'll have Warrior to do that 10 times better.
Hold on. You're forgetting the Borton Downey Jr. segment, okay? Which was really good. Mostly thanks to Borton.
So the finish is DiBiase administers a beatdown and Virgil turns the tide with an exposed turnbuckle spot and gets the 3 for the win, a huge pop, and the $1 million belt at 10:53.
I thought what should have been a shit match, like the WrestleMania one, it actually turned out to be pretty okay. A lot of that was to do with Piper's commentary, which I pretty much enjoyed. He really put him over. And I thought DiBiase was well on his game tonight.
This is a testament to how awesome he is. Look how much the crowd care about Virgil, and it's not because of Virgil. Like, that's well done, Ted DiBiase.
The story and the build-up and the payoff and the commentary and the crowd were so good that it overturned the match being shite. I thought it was thumbs up overall.
Backstage beside the paddy wagon? Backstage beside the paddy wagon and cops, Mean Gene is with the Mountie, who cuts an exposition promo telling us all about the match. So he tells these local hick cops to drag Boss Man to jail, kicking and screaming. Sean Mooney is with the big Boss Man, who refutes it. A jailhouse match. It's the heel Canadian law enforcer, clad in red, versus the face American law enforcer, clad in blue.
Technically, the big Boss Man is not a law enforcement dude. He's a fucking babysitter. He's a prison guard.
Corrections officer.
Yeah, it's not enforcing law.
No, it isn't.
It's enforcing rules, but it's not enforcing law.
More than
a teacher.
Or a librarian, or, yep, you know, that kind of thing.
Did you notice in the build up promo package there's a bit where the Mountie has the shocker and, you know, he goes to jam it down on a Boss Man, but he moves at the last minute and you get the TNA electrified cage mat sounds that
and as Homicide comes in, he tops him right into the electrified cage again.
The Mountie versus the Big Boss Man. The loser spends the night in jail. So there are some awesome promos, both dudes separately, would be in the lockup and the Mountie would be there and he's saying, ah, I'm going to get your fingers and I'll book you like the swine that you are. And that's Rapsy Nesbitt. Well, there were cool promos where he'd be in the lockup and he'd show you various parts of the jail and saying that's where Boss Man deserves to be and that's where he's going. Now, the Mountie's catchphrase is he always gets his man. That's intentionally as a homosexual connotation, right?
Really?
You can't be oblivious to that.
No, I think that's the Mountie's tagline. Do you know?
Piper says, yeah, as he says, the Mountie in jail will get his man.
Oh, yeah, so, very, yeah. Very good. There we go.
Pretty much punch-kick affair to start off anyway, but they are still moving three times faster than Slaughter. Bossman catches Mountie and hits a nice Alabama slam type manoeuvre.
A spine buster, maybe? Yeah,
after a few failed attempts, Rougeau hits a pile driver. He fails in his shocker attempts, as does Bossman's pin after hitting the Bossman slam. Mountie kicked out. How about that?
Mountie hit the big Bossman. The referee was looking at it.
Did he start counting?
No, it's been a while, but
been a while.
These things in wrestling are called the rules.
Oh.
Yeah, follow them.
Trailer hits the Alabama slam and gets the clean three at 8:38. And I thought this was, yeah, quite impressive match and above what I thought they would do. Bossman getting a great crowd reaction and I reckon was in the right spot on the card, slugging it out in a fairly comedy match at a decent pace that doesn't overstay its welcome.
I actually expected more from the match. I really like both of these guys. I think both of them can work. Just Bossman had an established finisher, the Bossman slam. So now because it's no longer his finisher, the Mountie is allowed to kick out of it. And then he hits a new move, the Alabama slam. But now because that's his finisher, the Mountie cannot kick out of this. So what's wrong with the fucking Bossman slam?
And yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I thought the match was okay, but I expected a lot better out of it. But I love just the image of these two guys. They, you know, it's like good versus evil. It's like as close to Black Hat, White Hat as wrestling gets.
Yeah.
And just the two of them wearing the same jocks. The black trousers, the yellow stripe, and then the red and the blue. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, really well done. The only feud that I could think would be better for Bossman would be like if there's some prisoner or something that Bossman had wronged at some point. Oh, man. That would be amazing.
That's a great idea.
It'd be great.
Man, I hope WWE have to do it at some point.
Yeah, I really do.
Immediately post-match...
This guy should be, like, hard as nails. Like.
Immediately post-match... Bob, can I just say this? Immediately post-match, Boss, Boob and the cops drag the Mountie into the paddy wagon and he heads for the pokey.
That's all you wanted to say, is it?
Yeah.
Well, is there any particular reason they're called paddy wagons?
Irish drunks?
Or like maybe those are the early cops in America were Irish, maybe?
Maybe it's during Prohibition times.
Ah.
So illegal drinking, Irish known for drinking, here you go. And it's a fun name to say.
I like Steve's better.
So apparently we're hitting the ad break questionarium as Steve has got up and left. So it's time for the ad break questionarium. This week's question, which wrestler always gets his man? Now the question was, which wrestler always gets his man? If you answered the Mountie, you're wrong. The answer is... Pat Patterson.
Nice.
And we're back. Up next we have a conveyor belt, a fucking rake of promos. DiBiase and Sherry, they're mad after losing, and he says he's been ripped off. Brett has his new Intercontinental Championship belt, and he blandly recites the outcome of the match. I beat Mr. Perfect, I am the champion, Mr. Perfect, I beat you, here's your championship belt, can I have your thong?
It's not really a promo, it's like a recap.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Natural Disasters are with Jimmy Hart and they threaten LOD. And then a victorious, sweaty boss man tries a joke.
What kind of bird can't fly?
I was immediately like, ostrich, emu, duck, chicken.
I have here penguin, emu, ostrich.
I have that here.
What if Mooney said a penguin?
And then the real, the punchline is a jailbird, just because I know you.
Yeah. He says the law is his gimmick, not the Mounties. And then he finishes with his new catchphrase, shh. We get an update with the Mountie as he meekly resists the local hick cops going to jail. And he's so funny. He's like, oh, you stupid. I'm the Mountie. It's, oh, he's so good.
Oh, you stop, you stupid! You know who I am? I'm the Mountie!
The Nasty Boys say that the LOD are going to Nastyville.
Jerry Sags is moaning that the Legion of Doom and Jack Tunney have coagulated to make these rules.
Their cells have invaginated.
All three men, Jimmy Hart, Sags and Nobbs, start their promos by saying,
let me tell you something, baby!
Hey, let me tell you something! Oh, baby! LOD and Jack Tunney coagulated to make these rules!
They've been hanging around Hogan too much.
Mm.
Jimmy Hart is irate that they take Mounty's mugshot, which he sells when the camera flashes in disbelief and rage. It's just, oh, great.
Jimmy Hart is great here.
LOD look past the WWF Tag Team Champions, the Basti Boys, and start cutting a promo on the Natural Disasters. It's a bit mean, isn't it?
Yeah. And Animal, in two sentences in this promo, his first one is, you know, Gene, and then the second one is, let me tell you something.
Hogan's there, yes.
Like what you've done there.
Amazing.
You see, when we get done with the Nasty Boys, we're going to call them the Basti Boys.
The Mountie is asked to give his finger to get his 10 card done, and he gives the law the finger. And then his middle finger is fingerprinted. Oh, it's very clever.
This was my favourite out of all the Mountie skits tonight.
You're still enjoying this, yeah?
Yeah, loving it. They should have put the whole thing in a montage.
Most of them were shit. I thought this one was fantastic.
Sean Mooney segues Mountie being outnumbered to his guest at this time. The three-man team led by Sergeant Slaughter, it's Slaughter himself, and the Core, not Justin Gabriel and the rest.
The Corey.
Sarge doesn't understand what he's saying and just says, no, the faces are outnumbered. And the left lens of his shades are fogged up. So.
Yeah, I thought he had like some kind of plaster on his eye or something.
No, just steamy windows.
Pishy windows. Pishy. He mentions the good guy's preoccupations and says he's got one more surprise. And for the 12th vignette in a row, this is not the in-ring era. No, that sounded funnier on the page. Oh, well. Sid Justice is with Mean Gene in, like, Sonny's referee vest.
I bet you can't guess how he opens his promo.
Go on, Steve.
Shh! He says, let me tell you, Gene.
How about joining the core? Come on, triangle of terror.
It's ready together, but I don't think I
core of destruction.
He teases not being a heel or face, but justice will be served. A third fucking law enforcer? We already have a Hogan, mate.
Yeah, what's he supposed to be? Like, as in, his name is Sid Justice. He doesn't have, like, a part-time job, like,
he's definitely not, Mountie, not a judge or anything.
No.
Well, he has the noodle hair. He needs the gavel. Like. All right, next match. It's the WWF Tag Team Champions, the Basti Boys, versus Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom. And there's a shot in the crowd of a fan with homemade Nasty Boys dolls and outfit. How awesome was that? Piper informs us that the Nasties have an open contract, and that states that every match of theirs will be a title defence. So they're fighting champions. This match looks like a slam dunk squash. This is one of those matches where the outcome is so predictable that it's slightly unpredictable. You know?
LOD cheat. They attack the Nasties before the bell.
Oh, Pearl Harbor.
That's not very face-like.
No.
The match is in fast forward as Animal hits a powerbomb. Sags forgets to follow up and Hawk tags him with an enziguri and the Nasties take control. The heels sequester Hawk on the outside, hitting him with drinks basin and extension cords. And Monsoon informs us that this match is a no DQ and no countout match as well.
That's grand, isn't it?
Yeah, good to know it, though.
Yeah.
Bit of a Shavante there. I was surprised at the fast pace of the match. Animal gets the hot tag, but is cut off. Sags goes to use the helmet. Why didn't you use it at the start? No DQ.
Yeah.
You know?
Because the rules hadn't fully coagulated.
Hey, if no DQ, why did LOD take off their shoulder pads?
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
And apparently they're solid steel spikes as well.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. That is the mattest finish of a metal I've ever seen.
I'm sure you appreciated this. Animal ducks, but unbelievably, the heel is smart enough to stop and not hit his partner.
Fucking loved it.
And hits Animal in the back instead. Does this make them the smartest heels on the roster?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And Animal looked like a fucking idiot as well.
The sort of finish is when Hawk nails Jimmy, who, like a golden axe baddie, throws up his helmet when he gets hit. Let's see if I can splice that. Hawk clocks Nubs, then clocks Sags, and then the crowd erupt as they set up for the Doomsday Device. Like, as soon as Animal goes, you know, with the thumbs up, everyone goes crazy for it.
Mm.
And they hit the Doomsday Device and get the clean three, a new face tag team champions, Legion of Doom, at 7:46. So here we go. With this win, the Road Warriors are the first tag team to hold the AWA, the NWA, and now the WWF Tag Team Championship belts, beating Rashke and the Crusher in 84, the Midnight Express in 88, and the Nasty Boys here. So, pretty awesome.
Nicely spread out as well.
Mm.
The Doomsday Device has to be the most dangerous wrestling move.
It's right up there with it, like the Vertebreaker.
Yeah.
Like, that's a shocking move. Yeah.
The safest version, then.
Don't do the flip and just do, electric chair. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I thought it was a great idea making it a no DQ, no countout, as the Nasties are afforded like every shortcutted transitional tag team should get, and the brawl was the right decision, even if the teams kind of keep it quite civil in the ring for the most part until the finish of the match.
I have nothing good to say about this match. I thought it was awful.
I was happy with it. I thought the length was just right.
Yeah, one of the most predictable outcomes in history.
It's like right up there with Taker versus Mark Henry.
Don't tell Greg that.
There was no reason to hold off on giving LOD the belts. They're crazy over, and we've seen it too often in wrestling history that you just hold off too long and they lose their heat.
James Storm.
Yeah, case in point.
So we get three title changes tonight. Brett with the IC belt, Virgil with the $1 million belt, and the Legion of Doom with the tag team championship.
$1 million belt shouldn't count them, sorry.
No, it doesn't count.
Well, it is a title.
It's not rubbish. Sanctioned. It's a belt.
It's
not a title.
No. Sorry, Jay.
But if they have it in a sanctioned match in the WWF, does that not make it a title? Because it's complete with rules and everything.
What the audience decide?
More with the Mountie as he gets thrown in a cell as the rent-a-cops try not break their shit laughing.
I thought this woman's good because he spends like 10-15 seconds begging them to let him go and that he'll walk to his cell, and the second they let go of him, he tries to make a run for it. Like
the debut, the re-debut of Mike Rotunda, Erwin Orr Scheister, and Fink spells it out just in case. IRS. He calls the fans tax cheats as some odd song with an anvil hits. Who is it? Oh, fuck, it's Valentine. Yeah, 7 years in, Greg Valentine finally gets a theme song. So it's IRS versus Greg Valentine, the figure four versus the W four. I thought that was quite clever. Much like Ricky Steamboat, Mike Rotunda is returning to the WWF. His last WWF pay-per-view appearance was Episode 1, WrestleMania 1, where he tagged with Barry Windham at the US Express, best known for Hogan stealing their entrance theme music, Real American.
Oh, yeah.
Rotunda left on good terms in 1986, Windham didn't. I tell you what, Vince has a soft... Oh, God. And Vince has a spot for those loyal to him. Vince said, yeah, when you're done with NWA, come on back. Yeah,
it's nice of him.
Yeah, yeah. Contrast that to Ricky Steamboat, where he's on a shit list.
Yep. Yeah.
Mike Rotunda, he spent the last few years in the NWA under various questionable gimmicks. I'll throw them out, see what you think. Okay, he joined Kevin Sullivan's...
Varsity Club, Jesus. Hold on. Who is going to believe Kevin Sullivan is in college? He's like the fucking crypt keeper. Jesus, he's terrifying looking.
Yes, the Varsity Club, a heel amateur wrestling stable. So that was pretty shit, actually. Gimmick number two, Captain Mike Rotunda, a face sailor complete with a captain's hat and an anchor on his arm.
Yeah.
And he had his crew, Abdullah the Butcher and Norman the Lunatic. It's quite short-lived. And number three, a heel precursor to IRS, Michael Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Paired with Alexandra York and her computer, which could 100% accurately predict how and how long it'd take to defeat Wall Street's opponents.
That's cool.
I think
it's... Is it really, though?
Yes.
I think this is the fucking bee's knees. Yeah. It's like, I know it sounds very campy, but it could be quite a streak if he beats them in the manner and the time at which he said he would.
Come on. Come on, Steve.
I don't know. I'd imagine this is... early enough in the 90s, maybe people believed it, you know, it was possible, you know, like, yeah. Not that this was the actual one that could read the future, yeah. But yeah. Maybe they believed, yeah, the concept was possible,
yeah. Yeah. Skynet was only 7 years off anyway.
Right, yeah.
It's, yeah, wonderful, absolutely
amazing,
yeah.
Splicey, I'll tell you next show.
Alexandra York here was actually played by Terry Runnels, Marlena Goldust's wife. Alright, let's go through this shitty match. The commentators preemptively explain / apologise about Hammer's gas tank.
Yeah. The other one is that he wears a tie to the ring, which is obviously stupid.
Because it can be used to choke him.
Exactly.
Would that be legal? Because he's wearing it.
Interesting. Yeah, can you choke somebody with their own singlet?
I think it's dubious because, you know, you're allowed to go to the ring and you have boots on, but once you take a boot off and use it, they strike someone, it's illegal. But he's wearing it, so, yeah, I don't know. We'll have to consult the rule book. So prior to IRS debut, he cut promos behind a bureaucrat's desk, calling the fans and the face wrestlers tax cheats. I get the feeling it's like Vince is like, man, I fucking hate the US government. Paying too much taxes. I already told them the show was fake. So much like the Parents Television Council and the RTC, you get the bureaucrats here in IRS.
Yeah.
What I've written here, move the core. 80s heel staple of abdominal stretch and getting leverage from the ropes. I must have brought this from the NWA. Monsoon correctly postulates why no one has grabbed IRS's tie or suspenders and then choked him with it. And then Heenan says it's a clip-on tie, so just come off. And Monsoon idiotically says the suspenders aren't clip-ons, but all suspenders are clip-ons.
No, some are buttons.
Oh, okay. That'll do. I just thought, like, are they supposed to be onesies or something that go all the way, like, massive rubber bands around your body? Crotch, yeah, man. Yeah. I thought that's what he was getting at.
So you actually have to, like, put them on? Like, like a Borat.
Like a,
the mankini.
Awesome. Like a long purse, you know, swinging between your legs.
How would that work? So you put on your shirt and your jocks, then you put on the suspenders, then your trousers. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
No, because they're to hold up your trousers, aren't they?
Yeah, but you can still put them on and put the straps on, but not tighten.
Yeah, you know, but they wouldn't be attached to your trousers unless you wore them over your trousers under your crotch.
Is this why suspenders died out? These conversations.
I didn't see much of the match. I was giving out about the commentary a lot. They were mainly talking about Jake Roberts. Fucking cheers, lads. You know?
So the finish is IRS gets a rope break on the first figure four lock, and then gets a small package before the next, and gets the three in a piss break, no heat match. Way to get someone over against Valentine. What's wrong with Coco?
Yeah.
Coco was busy. Coco was. was busy jobbing out Kato in a dark match before the pay per view. Yep, this is Valentine's last big match, but he's not leaving. I don't know how this has gotten under our radar. He's been with the WWF since before WrestleMania 1. Like, he wrestled for Vince Sr. in the WWF in the 70s. He has racked up 17 pay-per-view paydays.
Yeah. Wow.
Fuck. Backstage, Mean Gene is with the Face Tag Team, the America-clad Ultimate Warrior, and the WWF Champion Hulk Hogan. Hulkster name drops January 23rd, 1984, which is the day where he beat Sheik for the belt. He doesn't actually say it. And now they're stepping in the ring again over 7 years later. Warrior dismisses his Cobra Snake Bite.
What?
And has his own brand of Hulkamania called Warrior Wildness. Do you think that'll catch on?
No.
Warrior steals this show, and he says, and I quote, "They leave how they came in. The same."
I thought you were going to say through the door. Hogan makes sure to get the first and last promo in as the lads finish with a synchronous catchphrase before Warrior moves in for a smooch.
Yeah.
Sergeant Slaughter, you and your corps are doomed, brother. And what you gonna do when the Hulkster and the Ultimate Warrior destroy you?
Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me.
Alright, the biggest angle of the summer didn't happen at SummerSlam. It was on TV. So there's no real mention of it here, so we gotta mention it because it's awesome. Before the Warrior laid out Brother Love, he named Brother Bearer as The Undertaker's new manager. Post-WrestleMania, Paul Bearer introduced his new talk segment, The Funeral Parlor. He claimed that the Warrior was afraid to come onto his show, and when the Warrior arrived, The Undertaker attacked him. The dead man locked him into an airtight casket and left him to die, as officials, including Wurzel, feverishly tried to break open the impromptu tomb. You could see that the casket would easily open, but they had the kayfabe pretend it was shut. When they finally pried open the casket, Earl Hebner offered CPR despite the Warrior being already revived. The Warrior came back a changed man. When Jake appeared on the funeral parlor, he threatened the evil Bearer by offering his knowledge and methods to the Warrior to overcome the dark side, the Snake Man having walked that road before. He asked Warrior to trust him, he accepted, and we retreated to three trials of Jake. First, the Ultimate Warrior had to allow himself to remain in a sealed casket, returning like a dead man, his eyes serene and empty, although his frizzy hair and vacant stare made it look hilarious. Secondly, Warrior dug up a grave and in it was a skull, and spent the night in the cemetery being buried up to his head to stare at the exhumed skull until morning. Lastly, to go into a literal snake pit and ask the Cobra Lucifer about his fate. The Warrior reluctantly opened up the little casket ornament on the pedestal, and a cobra appeared, and it struck and bit Warrior.
Oh, not what you expected!
He struggled and knocked down the door trying to escape. As the venom coursed through his veins, he passed out. As we saw, The Undertaker and Paul Bearer standing above him, and Jake started laughing. He was a fool to trust a snake after all.
Reach out for me. I'm a snake. Never trust a snake.
So Jake Roberts, he's now a killer heel.
It sounds brilliant, but why did Jake turn heel?
He was distraught over his snake and decided to become one with the snakes again and speak parcel tongue. And yeah, he'd found solace in the dark side, I guess.
Alright.
That's fine,
yeah. Yeah, so I hope you enjoy that. So it's very sad. Undertaker and Jake don't have a match on this pay-per-view for some reason. They're both healthy, by the way. There's no good reason for it. It's probably because they wanted to keep on with Sergeant Slaughter for some reason. And that match is next. final match. Well, is it a match? Yeah. The final in-ring confrontation on the card is upon us. It's the match made in hell, refereed by newcomer Sid Justice. It's a 3-on-2 handicap match. Sergeant Slaughter with his Triangle of Terror, or the Core, either one, General Adnan and Colonel Mustafa versus top babyfaces Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan. Heenan plays up on Sid turning heel, and Piper plays up the dissension of the face tag team. The entire build-up of this match is just after WrestleMania 7, Hogan is coming back from his win and from, you know, wiping his arse with the flag. Slaughter throws a fireball into Hogan's face. They don't do anything more with that. He brings in Sheiky to form the Triangle of Terror, and that's it.
And then Hogan just says, Warrior gives a hand.
And he's like,
alright. Fair enough.
I was going to have a match with Jake, but this is more money this way. So. Yeah. Sid Justice. He was previously in Alabama and Memphis as Lord Humongous and Sid Vicious. Who was named after the Sex Pistols bassist, obviously, is in from WCW, where he was one half of the heel Skyscrapers with Dan Spivey, managed by Teddy Long. And he was a very sloppy worker who almost killed Brian Pillman as he powerbombed him onto his neck. Do you remember during War Games, his legs hit the ceiling and he just kind of dropped them on his neck? It was right. Fucking disgusting. Sid was one of the Four Horsemen in 1990. And he actually turned down a WCW title run and big money in mid-91 as Vince was convinced he was the next Hulk Hogan. And so, come on over.
I think he's awesome.
I've never been a big Sid fan. I don't think his promos or his wrestling are particularly good. And he looks like a badass, but he also has a poodle head. That's not scary.
Sid, with Perfect Gun, they needed to fill their quota of bleach noodle heads. The Big Urban Legend, WrestleMania 13, when he wrestles The Undertaker, that's the match where he shit himself. And so there's a particularly nasty tombstone waiting for Mark Calloway.
Jesus, can you imagine him?
You mentioned him when he goes to WCW, he has the infamous promo with the Outsiders, where he says,
but you know what I know, that you're only half the man that I am!
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
Let us talk about the Iron Sheik, Colonel Mustafa, another returning oldie. Last seen at episode 5, WrestleMania 3, where himself and Volkov went over the Killer Bees. The Iranian Olympic wrestler returns under a fucking Iraq gimmick, Colonel Mustafa, joining Slaughter and Adnan and forming the Triangle of Terror. And I guess there's only two sides to every conflict, American and foreigner, you know. The Iran-Iraq war concluded in March, so, yeah, nobody gives a shit about Iraqi sympathisers. So. Not that they did for WrestleMania 7. Something else annoys me about Iran and Iraq. Are they owned by Apple? What the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
Fucking Americans. Iran.
Arab.
Hi, Reb.
Oh, my esophagus.
It's fucking frustrating.
So we kick off with stalling. Sid disarms Sarge, who was ready to use a leather belt. Hogan steamrolls Slaughter until Sid breaks up the turnbuckle lockup, and he curiously tells Hogan that it's 1, 2, 3, and then you're out.
No, it's a 10 count before you're out.
5 for a DQ.
Yeah, 5 for a DQ, yeah.
The 3 count is... Did you just come from playing a baseball game?
So he loves a softball, doesn't he? It's Sid who loves the softball. Yeah, that's right.
Sheik slaps on a camel clutch.
Why do you say you want to fuck Hulk Hogan himself?
I mean, I'm going to fuck him up differently. That me beat the fuck out of him and suplex him, put him in the camel clutch, break his back, and fuck his ass and make him humble.
And Piper makes an 83 reference, but it's completely sandbagged by everyone around him. You're not allowed to mention that he was a previous fucking world champion.
I understand bringing back people and changing their gimmicks. Like, I think that the Mountie gets away with it, because he was in a tag team, he looks completely different. It's just the Sheik in a fucking green shirt. Everything is the same. Like, did anybody fall for this in the entire world?
I don't know, like... people just recognize this is his gimmick, but that's the Iron Sheik. Like, hot tag to Warrior, and much like Hogan, he runs into Sid by mistake, and he maintains neutrality, so that kind of kills any heat for a heel turn.
Warrior takes a clothesline to the canvas. He starts pelvic thrusting as a way of like hulking up. I like it.
As I understand, the thrust is a must.
It is a must.
Heels work over Warrior until they hot tag to Hogan. Then you get a big boot to Slaughter, and that signals, hey everybody, it's the finishing sequence. Helwig shoes off Adnan and Mustafa backstage. And he leaves Hogan and Slaughter in the ring. Ah, sucks to be Slaughter. Hogan illegally throws powder, freedom powder, I guess, in Slaughter's face, and he takes a bump from it, obviously. And then we get the big leg drop, the 1-2-3, and Hulkamania and Warrior wildness prevail.
Yeah, where did he get his freedom powder? You know, it wasn't like they were talking about it beforehand, or Slaughter had it in a bag and was going to use it. Where the fuck did he get this stuff?
Yeah, so the outcome of this match, more obvious than LOD versus the Nasties, and hence they add in the intrigue with the maybe Sid will be here.
Intrigue?
Not.
Hogan calls Sid back to pose with him. Can you say Hogan's next feud? It's like, it's the most obvious thing ever.
Did you like him peeking out from the back curtain going,
me? You want me?
It would have been brilliant if he went into the ring and Hogan was no, Warrior, right?
So the newest, biggest Hulkamark on the planet goes and does all of Hogan's routines with him.
And where the fuck was the Warrior?
Phew. Sweep and rush.
Yeah, what the fuck? Why wasn't Jake in this match? Where was Taker? Why isn't it, at the very least, Slaughter, Jake, and Taker versus maybe Warrior, Hogan, Andre? You know, that'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah. You could have had Slaughter lose, and then that would have kept the other two strong, and would have given them a payday, and it would lead into the next show. This was shite.
Yeah. Comparing it to WrestleMania 7, it was much shorter match, about half the length, and more wrestlers in the match, since there's the tag, and so led to a more interesting match, although that's not saying much.
Yeah. It was less offensive, though, than the WrestleMania match.
Yeah. No one gave a shit about this match at all.
Was there any heat for this? Did anyone believe the heels would win this match?
No.
Sure, like, did you remember that the Survivor Series match with, like, what was it, 5-6 heels? They've got no chances.
Was it Hogan, Warrior, and Tito? Arriba!
Alright, that is not the end of the pay-per-view. Hey, suck it, Hogan. We get a final Mountie vignette. This is the last time Mountie will go on after Hogan. As his cellmate asks if he wants to fight his buddy, some extra straight from the Blue Oyster, and he insinuates that he's going to ass rape the Mountie.
Get out of here!
Where's me buddy?
Hi.
Oh my god!
Don't you just love the way leather feels against your body?
Let me out of here! Let me out of here!
Together.
The puke-a-thon that's coming up next.
The ultimate puke.
Do you remember the song? Because I was like, I gotta remember this. You ready?
Absolutely.
Are you ready? 1, 2, 3.
Together.
Together.
If they played this song over, like, the fucking wedding scene at the end of, like, Saved by the Bell, the college year, so it would have ruined the entire thing, like,
because the rest was great.
What a pile of shite to play over it.
Together.
What did you think, Jake?
Well done. I did not remember the lyrics to this song.
I wrote them down.
Yeah, very good.
It was just one line.
Yeah, so we got a video package for Macho and Liz's wedding. So we see Macho proposing and Liz accepting. It's very funny because he plays it off like they're going to do a test of strength, you know? So he's got it out. Like, oh, I don't know. You know, ask the crowd, look around, you know?
I always loved this bit. You know, when Macho Man finally asks her to marry him.
What does he say?
It's like the slowest. He's like, Liz, will you marry me? It's just the slowest, most awkward, non-romantic proposal in the history of the world. Remember when TNA did the parody of it with Jay Lethal?
Really good.
Oh, was it now?
Yeah, so we see Macho Man here in a feathered golden tassel tuxedo. Awesome. And you've seen there, they've quite dressed up the ring. They've put...
really? You noticed that, did you?
Yes, they've taken down the ropes. And
did you see?
Added bits and bobs to make it look more ceremonial.
Did you see when the flower girl coming out just terrified fat child?
Fucking Honey Boo Boo over here. I get the feeling you don't know who these people are. Maybe they're actually his mates, you know?
Oh, yeah. They're like producer's kids or something.
I meant like the best man.
Oh, sorry.
Everyone at the reception, that kind of thing. They're all guys from the office that just went downstairs for the night. Randy Savage and Liz's wedding ceremony. So just catch you up to speed. Post-WrestleMania, Savage transitioned to color commentator because he was retired by The Ultimate Warrior, WrestleMania 7. And the 6th July Superstars, during a Miss Elizabeth in-ring interview, Mean Gene kind of twists her arm by saying, hey, do I hear wedding bells? No, he's got tinnitus. Like. Yeah, Macho got in the ring and won the and proposed to Liz, saying,
will you marry me?
To which she said,
oh, yeah. Her balls are dropping.
So your baby balls are falling off and adult balls have come through. And so the wedding ceremony was to take place at SummerSlam as the match made in heaven. Isn't that convenient? Prior to the search for Hogan's new best mate because Beefcake was out, you remember, with the parasailing accident, smashed up his face. Well, he's back on the scene, but he's not wrestling. So he also has his face interview segment called The Barbershop. Sherry was there and she insulted the two. And she hinted that she'll ruin the wedding, she'll slap Savage and she'll puke on Liz. And Beefer gave her transportation to SummerSlam. She gave her a broom. Well, it's great. Teasing a wedding not going swimmingly. Quite like Sid in the last match. Oh, let's tease everything not going well here. So Savage still works a ton of WWF house shows and SWS shows in Japan, where Tenryu and Kato were. Yeah, this is not WWF's first wedding. They actually had two of them beforehand.
Really?
Yeah, they had Paul Vachon and Ophelia and Uncle Elmer and Joyce Frazier in 84 and 85. Tell you about that later. So thankfully, it's just the I do's and not the hour-long mass and communion. Man, but it'd be awesome if they had like these WWF wafers and gave them out.
Nice. I love the way Macho worked the crowd for about a minute before saying ooh yeah.
So we get an ooh yeah, an I will, two rings, vows and a smooch, and Liz and Macho are married.
The only thing that I noted from the ceremony was Macho was just staring Liz out of it and she didn't know where to look.
Yeah, this was booked as a sweet and serious affair. No drunken video revelations, no objections, no heart attacks. Maybe the swerve was... There was no swerve. Yeah, I'm glad that these two were able to do something without Vince thinking better of it and like trying to hotshot an angle with Sherry that dies a death in 2 weeks and goes nowhere. I was just thinking, would the crowd shit on it if it wasn't Macho and Liz? If it was another couple? Like... Cyndi Lauper or something?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No, who else has a bird that he could marry?
No.
Frankie.
He's the best man and the bestiality man.
I don't think a 1991 crowd would shit on many things.
Yeah. Although I can't see any other couple possibly having gone in the main event spot. Although I also think this shouldn't have been in the main event spot either.
No.
The fucking pay-per-view fizzled out with this, but...
The reception.
I think this was a Coliseum home video exclusive, was it? The reception, or was that part of the...
It was a what? A home video...
Exclusive!
Yes, that's why I was saying we were lucky to actually watch the Coliseum home video, because if we watched the anthology version, which is sourced from the live pay-per-view, we didn't get the big angle.
The most important part of the entire pay-per-view.
Yeah, and the only fucking appearance of the two guys with the biggest angle over the summer. Ooh, let's talk about it. So, Coliseum home video, we're invited to the wedding reception with a band. If you saw the sax player, he looks just like Dave Meltzer. The guests line up to congratulate the two. Bobby Heenan comes up and he's just shaking his head, just in disapproval.
He's shaking his head, and then Macho is quite funny, actually. He says, show this man the exit. Why did you invite him then? And it seemed like he was the only wrestling-related person at the fucking wedding.
Yeah, there was just people, like children and shit.
Yeah, so we get some highlights of the night. We get a champagne toast, the first dance from the married couple, the cutting of the cake, where Macho says, me first.
He bleeding milling the cake out of it. You see that, right? He took his big bit, and then he gave her a little bit, and then had the rest of her bit. That's a divorce. That's my fucking cake.
Yeah, and then the bridesmaids catch the bouquet. Yes.
I rarely watch these pay-per-views on Andrea, but she just so happened to be there while I was watching the wedding and the reception and all that. And, you know,
did she love it?
No, you see, I was thinking, she's going to find this nice. And I can't remember her exact words, but it was along the lines of, this is ridiculous. I hope you're writing, this is ridiculous.
What was ridiculous about the ceremony?
That it's happening?
That it was happening in the middle of a ring, and then the outfit and that kind of thing.
You'd like to think that Andrea would have gotten married in a ring if you asked her.
Andrea, will you marry me? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You know the greeting of the guests as they're queuing up? It was lucky that there was a camera that was one of the guests, wasn't it? So we got to see a real first-person view, didn't it?
Yes. Finally, the present opening. And Macho's like, yeah, got a blender. Candlesticks. Nice you to break a five. And there's a champagne bucket as well. Lord Alfred Hayes voiceovers the segment.
Yeah, thank God.
He sounds like David Attenborough.
He's great. Come on, lads.
I did enjoy it.
Their celestial happiness was also evident as they later embraced each other on the ballroom floor.
He's got quite an informal formality too, which is very nice. It's probably quite pretentious, which means I'm quite pretentious. Liz opens up another present, but it's a cobra inside. Oh my god. The great selling by Liz being terrified. And Taker comes out of nowhere and KOs Randy with an urn. Liz taunts... Jake taunts... Liz taunts Jake.
You.
Jake taunts Liz with a snake. Unfortunately, Liz pulls a Marty and corpses until Sid fends them off with a tiny deck chair. I could swear Jake says, hey, there's a princess. Oh, where's the bitch's head?
Where's the princess's head? Oh, come on!
Who? Yeah. Yeah, so instead of crashing the pay-per-view live, they crashed the home video relief. Thanks. So everyone's happy. Randy's happy that his moment isn't spoiled, and Vince is happy that he gets his wrestling angle in.
Yeah.
And that closes the pay-per-view for tonight. Let's go to the aftermath and chat about it. So, what did you guys think of the pay-per-view, Steve?
This is one of those weird ones. It's like a very WWF show. It's like, it feels like a late 90s WCW show to me, with a kind of decent opener, mid-card matches. Normally a Fed show builds up to the main event and you get your payoff, but just the main events in this were stanking. They were an absolute waste of time.
The main event was fucking atrocious. The wedding was shit. I did enjoy the attack at the end. What annoyed me most about the pay-per-view, and you know I get hung up on promo packages and things, but needed a pay-per-view after WrestleMania before here, just to set up what's going on. There's so much shit happening, important shit as well. Flair coming to WWF, or potentially coming to the WWF. Sid debuts and is immediately involved in the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan aligns with the Ultimate Warrior. The Iron Sheik returns and aligns with Slaughter. Jake turns heel, aligns with Taker, and feuds with Macho Man.
Macho Man is going to wrestle again. That's huge.
That's huge as well.
Yeah.
Tug Job turns heel and aligns with Quake. Mountie and Boss Man finish a pretty major feud, by the looks of things. A mid-card feud. Well, not so much, but still, there's two pretty big debuts as well. Steamer as the Dragon and IRS. Huge amount going on here. It just needed a bit more substance, or a bit, little bit more spaced out than it has been. Unless you were watching Superstars every week, you wouldn't have a fucking clue what's going on.
Very good, say what.
It's a below average show, just because the main events didn't pay off for me.
Maybe it's different because I was keeping up with the storylines and watching Superstars and that, but in general, I loved the pay-per-view. I thought all of the matches had reason for being there and had satisfying conclusions. You get a lot of, you know, the Christmas WrestleMania booking where all the faces win, and you get that here. So that's pretty good. It makes it a very, I don't know, important and standout show. A hot crowd at Madison Square Garden all night. It really helped enjoying the pay-per-view. God, it's so such a difference from watching WrestleMania, which was a fucking chore to watch.
Oh, it was a lot better than Mania, yeah.
It's weird to have too much storyline, not enough pay-per-view, as opposed to today where, you know, SummerSlam, we're supposed to finish the Punk Cena feud, and they still haven't done it.
Yeah.
You know? All right, it's the same segment. Let's continue with the Aftermath segment. There is massive... Well, we already have a quake, but if we didn't, there's a rumbling in the WWF that will change and shape things afterwards. There was a big scar concerning Vince McMahon and the Ultimate Warrior. I'll tell you what happened. So, on the 13th of July, 1991, McMahon agreed to pay Warrior $550,000 for his WrestleMania 7 payoff with Savage, and get 5% of the live gate, and be the highest paid performer in the WWF above Hogan. And also, don't work any weekends unless they're television or pay-per-view. So McMahon agreed to this.
Wow.
Yeah. The day of SummerSlam, Vince says he wants to renege on the agreed deal. And Warrior says, fuck off, honour the agreed amount, or guess what, I'm not wrestling tonight. And Vince now has, oh, you're acting unprofessional, and here's my flimsy reason to suspend you and not pay you, and twist the story as he saw fit. Now Hellwig's pushed Vince too far. He's holding him up for a ridiculous amount of cash, and oh, he's just hungry, money hungry, and it's his fault that business since WrestleMania 6 declined.
With this, if Vince agreed to it, he's in the wrong if he's gone to renege on the deal. Like, he shouldn't have made the deal in the first place. As far as I'm concerned, Warrior did nothing wrong by saying, no, fuck you,
yeah,
I'm not going to wrestle.
I'd back Warrior there.
As far as Vince and the WWF is concerned, Warrior is done, and he's gone. He's suspended for 90 days, but it'll last longer than that. And Jake Roberts, you got to find someone else to terrorise.
This isn't the first time this happened. It happened with Jeff Jarrett as well. was it the same type of deal, or was Jeff Jarrett just a cunt the second time around?
You're talking about No Mercy 99. Vince Russo had just left for WCW, and Jeff Jarrett was wrestling China for the IC belt. And what happened is Russo decided at the pay-per-view before No Mercy, Jarrett would retain the belt. He was saying, oh, creatively, we'll just keep it going a month longer, it's a hot feud. So Russo went to WCW, and then they noticed, hang on, we booked the match for Jeff Jarrett at No Mercy, but his contract expires the day before No Mercy, so he doesn't have to work the pay-per-view and drop the belt to China. And he's actually headed to WCW to join Russo, and he's like, fuck, what are you going to do? So he says, all right, don't worry, Vince, I'll work the pay-per-view for $250,000. And he says, all right.
It's only the fucking IC title, though.
Honestly, it's Vince's fault.
He shouldn't have
let his contract roll over.
Yeah. Vince paid up the cash, and Jeff Jarrett was able to put down the starting capital for TNA.
Great.
Another question for you. How many WWE weddings have there been?
Three up to this point.
No, the rest of time.
Jesus. So there's the three so far.
There's.
Do you want to take a stab at it and then I'll go through?
Alright.
Only WWF?
Only WWF.
Okay.
12.
9.
16 total wedding ceremonies or receptions over the last 18 years. So the first one was Paul Vachon and Ophelia on Tuesday Night Titans 1984. Never heard of it.
I heard she drowned afterwards. Sorry.
Captain Lou objected but retracted it when he found out Ophelia was not a virgin. And your boy Dr. Schultz slammed the groom post-ceremony. Then you had Uncle Elmer and Joyce Frazier at Saturday Night's Main Event, October 5, 1985. That's more where Piper objected, but it went ahead anyway. And Ventura commented that them kissing looked like two carp going after the same piece of corn.
Jesus Christ.
Then you have Randy Savage and Liz tonight, SummerSlam 91. Stephanie McMahon and The Undertaker's Black Wedding, 26th April 99.
That was the next one.
Jeez.
Yep. Eight years.
You may now kiss your bride!
Oh, for God's sake!
She was in a black dress and she was secured to take her symbol.
She was so hot.
Ministry of Darkness prevented anyone from breaking it up, but Austin managed to clean house. He was thanked by Vince McMahon and it's like, oh my god, I'm the higher power.
Didn't Austin do the shitty face thing where I got to handcuff you, but oh, you're handcuffed now to Taker? I hate that spot. Okay. In movies as well.
Stephanie in Test and Stephanie in Triple H, the 29th November 99. Well, sure, Test came out to his theme, and then Triple H crashed the party and showed a video of an unconscious Stephanie where they go and get a drive-thru wedding.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Later, Stephanie and Triple H renewed their wedding vows, 11th of February 2002.
Yeah. Together.
So Stephanie and Triple H are on the verge of divorce. Stephanie hired someone to tell Triple H she was pregnant, so they'd stay together. They got the together. Or raping those cats. Jesus Christ. He found out it was a lie and pedigreed Vince, and we got the tit pop in it.
Yeah, spicy.
Spicy now twice.
Yeah,
twice.
Spicy
twice.
And then we got Billy and Chuck's wedding, the 12th of September 2002. With
the most horrible payoff ever. What do you mean? We're not gay.
Yeah.
We're just publicity stunts.
Fuck you, writers.
The bond that Chuck and Billy have is sacred. And that will never change. It doesn't matter if it lasts 50 years, 16 months, or 3 minutes.
Wait a minute.
What? Did I just hear myself say?
But I did love that the presiding reverend was actually Bischoff in makeup, because I didn't actually get it, because he was just some old guy that was, you guys should remain together, whether it's 10 years, 5 months, or 3 minutes. Wait a minute.
Nice.
Did I just hear myself say Chris Benoit? and so 3-minute warning come out and gay bash. So next up, we have Al Wilson and Don Marie.
Yeah, of course.
The fucking heart attack came.
Yes.
Yeah.
2nd January 2003, we got the Don Marie. She was feuding with Tori Wilson, Al's legit daughter, and made him marry her in his tidy whities. They ended the angle when he had a heart attack due to oversexing. Yes, next up, Lita and Kane. Raw, 23rd August 2004.
Mm-hmm. That's the one with the baby, right?
Yes, very good. Lita banged Kane if he'd stop beating up her boyfriend, Matt Hardy. What the fuck is that? Anyway, she became pregnant and Hardy lost the match to marry her. What a jobber. Of course, she's not actually pregnant, so they had the miscarriage angle during a match with Snitsky, and we get the infamous baby punt.
Yes!
Which is fucking awesome, it really was. Next up, we got Edge and Lita in the Raw 20th of June 2005. Shoot-wise, Lita was cheating on Matt with Edge, and that went public, and the fans hated both Edge and Lita for it. So storyline-wise, Lita turned on her husband Kane, threw her wedding ring down the toilet, and married Edge. Although Kane was under the ring and, you know, schmals. Next up, we have Teddy Long and Crystal in the
Jesus.
SmackDown.
That's, never would have got that.
SmackDown, 21st September 2007.
I hated her. She was no talent.
Is that Bob Olasho's wife?
Yeah, yeah.
This segment interrupted by Jillian singing. Then, remember, Godfather came out with his hose and don't you want a whore, you know? No. Hornswoggle and Coach ran under her dress. Before they had the I Do, Teddy had a heart attack due to taking Viagra before the wedding. Next up, we got Edge and Vicky Guerrero on SmackDown, 18th July 2008. That's the one where Triple H recorded Edge making out with the wedding planner.
He was right in front of them. Why did they kiss?
He probably had a board in front of him. And just his eye poking through the hole. They're on to me. A lot of security cameras in private rooms in the Fed.
Toilets as well.
NXT 2nd November 2010.
Oh, Goldust and the Russian one.
Yes, Goldust and Oksana. That's the episode with the Kevin Dunn production audio that they put up on YouTube. So you can hear Kevin Dunn slagging off the wrestlers and counting the segment times and cueing the music.
That was an amazing episode. Should have kept that.
15 seconds. Stand by your ballyhoo. 3, 2, 1, and go, Michael. All right. They'll work on it. They have trouble, we'll tell them, but I bet they get. And Kelly Music. What was the finish look like? I didn't even see it.
And this was the green card wedding. She's Lithuanian, and Goldust is from, Hollywood, California, so that works out. The Million Dollar Man married them, but before they kissed, she slapped him and left. And then they divorced as soon as she was eliminated from NXT.
It wouldn't be divorced, though, because it didn't consummate the marriage, so it would be an annulment.
Boom, bitches.
Fantastic work.
All right, so we got two more.
Yes.
Since Goldust and Oksana.
And that was in 2012?
2010. Yes.
Two more. Okay, I noticed Daniel Bryan AJ.
Yes, very good.
I know who it is.
Go on.
It's your fucking Maxine one.
Boom, yes, very good. Yeah, it's Maxine and Johnny Curtis.
Yeah.
NXT.
That's Fandango.
NXT, 18th June 2012. Former boyfriend Derek Bateman showed it was Johnny who sabotaged their relationship via security footage, and the two got back together. And the last one, as you said, Daniel Bryan and AJ. Raw 1000, 23rd of July 2012. Having dated for months, they broke up post-WrestleMania 28, Bryan blaming her for his loss to Shamo in, 17 seconds? But Bryan proposed when she flirted with CM Punk and Kane. Slick presided the ceremony, but her I do, she said I do, but that was actually referencing her job as the GM.
I'd be like, no, too late, you said it, we're married. Bam. Bend her over the ropes right there. Consummate the shit out of that. I love her. She is whopper.
Yep. Did you enjoy that look down memory lane?
That
was fun.
It was like a little bonus segment.
I thought that was
a little Brucey bonus.
That was something different.
Yes. So, let's take us to the wrestling is
awesome
segment.
Awesome.
Oh,
s'affida, chi le confido a Marco.
Alright, it's that time once again where we say goodbye. Episode 23 is in the books. Good stuff, lads.
Yep.
Oh, yep.
Hogan's vanquished and balding baddie bollocks. Sergeant Slaughter twice now. Where does he go from here? Will the Warrior dig a grave or bury Jake Roberts? Will Luke ever grab someone's junk again? I guess you'll have to find out next time on OSW Review. We will be back for episode 24 with the 1 year anniversary of the Gobbledygooker. It's the 1991 Survivor Series. What do you remember about it?
Taker wins the world title.
Alright, no point in revealing it. See you for episode 25. So remember, you can catch all of our episodes free of charge in an IMAX flavored 4:3 full screen at oswreview.com, and why not leave us a nice message? Subscribe via iTunes at itunes.oswreview.com and get the episodes a few days early. So it's a goodbye from Mr. OSC.
Right.
V1.
Alright.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you.
Good right. Show, lads.
You know what they always say, you know, with a band releasing a new album. Return to form, regardless of how bad or good the last album is, or how bad or good this album is.
Getting back to their roots and all
this
shit.
That's what we're doing. We're getting back to our roots.
Niall!
Life's streaking.
These are bad.
You fucking brought it up. Don't include me.
Together.